apparently of this working group. You will remember Mark Carvel has changed his functions. He used to be our co-chair from the UK, and now we have lost him in that role. And Maria Milagros Castañón, who has been up to now the Peruvian co-chair of this working group, and who sends her apologies because she had another commitment. There's a parallel GAC meeting going on, and there's another parallel thing, and then there is a reception from the registrars for the public safety working group of the GAC. So this is really a bad timing in the end. So Milagros, she's going to be the ambassador of Peru in Azerbaijan, so she will no longer be able to be the co-chair of this working group. So we have really a new setup and also a new situation where as GAC members, and here I look especially to those who have chosen amongst the different options to come to the Human Rights and International Law Working Group, we will have to decide in the coming months, I guess, from here to Panama, what we do with the leadership of this working group. I would, of course, like to have other co-chairs, and of course the co-chairmanship is always at the pleasure of the working group. And if you think that a complete renewal is needed, I would be also available for that option. So having said that, I think that first we go through the agenda. Agenda, well, is first point, this introduction. Second point, Thomas Rickert, one, the only remaining original co-chair of the CCWG Accountability, will inform us on and the state of play of the workings of that work stream and how the FOI plays out there, when it will get adopted finally, and what would be the time frame. Then we are joined by Michael and Colin from the CCWG, who are the new leadership of that working party, replacing Niels, who used to come to all our meetings of the human rights. He's here. Cool. Hello, Niels. And will inform us, I guess, about two things. First, we are interested, of course, on your take on the framework of interpretation and how the work you had started and which was presented to us in Abu Dhabi has evolved, and how we could implement the FOI in the ICANN environment, especially in the PDP's environment. And of course, then the other part would be what other activities are now prioritized by you, and of course, where can we interact more closely or cooperate more closely. And on this issue of the FOI, Alec has been so kind to send us Idio and Alan Greenberg, and we would be interested in knowing also how Alec, as advisory committee, as the GAC, is intending or thinking to approach the issue of FOI implementation. And, well, I don't know. Is this agenda agreeable to the group? Is there no objection, no formal objection? So we have consensus? Okay, cool. Then I guess we would go for Thomas.
Thanks very much, Jorge. And in fact, I'm the longest serving co-chair in the CCWG. I've even been there during the phase of the drafting of the charter for this exercise. So, but we have fresh blood amongst our co-chairs. So I'd really like to welcome Tijani, who is the latest addition to the team of co-chairs. And I'd also like to convey greetings from Jordan Carter, who can't be with us today. Now, I can give you a brief update on where we are procedurally. Should this group have questions on the substance of the FOI, we have Niels remotely, who is the rapporteur for this sub-team that's been working on the FOI. And then we have very knowledgeable members of the sub-team who have kindly accepted to be with us today, amongst those Tatiana Tropina and Greg Shatton. But Jorge has also been on the team, so he might be able to answer his own questions. But let's see. Now, where are we with our recommendations? As you know, Workstream 2 activities inside the CCWG accountability have been split into several sub-teams. And the sub-team working on the FOI has completed its work a while back. The FOI has been finalized. It has been put out for public comment. And the sub-team report has gone through two readings of the CCWG plenary, which have been successful. Now, last Friday, during the all-day plenary meeting at ICANN 61, the CCWG has completed successful readings on the four remaining sub-teams' work. So that puts us in a position to now assemble all the successfully approved sub-team reports into one report, which we're going to put out for public comment in the next couple of days. But for those who think that they can comment on the substance of these recommendations, they will be disappointed because, as I've just mentioned, all the sub-teams have already sent their reports out for public comment. So at this stage, we're only asking for comments on potential inconsistencies between the individual work packages. We've done our own assessment, particularly Bernie, our great staff supporting us, and we have not spotted any inconsistencies or the risk of inconsistencies, but nonetheless, we wanted to put that out for public comment. So once we've come out of this public comment period, we will pass on our finalized report to the chartering organizations for their approval, and should that be successful, then it will go to the board for the board's approval. And the rules for the board's approval are enshrined in the bylaws, so the board can only its approval of our report should any of our recommendations not be in the global public interest according to the board's views. And there needs to be a two-thirds majority inside the board to turn down recommendations coming out of our group. So we think that chances are good for our recommendations to make it through this process successfully. We hope that the chartering organizations will start the approval processes during the Panama meeting or shortly thereafter, that is ICANN 62, and we hope that the board will then subsequently make its own approval, although I should say that the board has asked questions about the implementation of the Workstream 2 recommendations, because as you might remember, in Workstream 1, we were forced to come up with implemented recommendations as a condition for the U.S. government to consider relinquishing its historical role with ICANN. This is not true for Workstream 2, so neither does the CCWG accountability have a mandate to implement its recommendations, nor do we have a budget for that. And we will have a discussion with the board, or a board caucus, I should rather say, to discuss how we're going to go about with the implementation of Workstream 2 recommendations. Our group has done its share by agreeing last Friday by consensus that we would suggest to the board to set up an implementation oversight team, an implementation review team consisting of the co-chairs and the rapporteurs of all the sub-teams to ensure that the recommendations are being implemented in the spirit of the CCWG's work. But we do know that this is a massive piece of work, and not all of the implementations of our recommendations can be done at a time. So I think everyone should be prepared that the implementation of our recommendations will take a couple of years because it's, you know, it affects many areas of ICANN's actions. But I think with respect to the work package on the FOI, it will probably be easier because it is up to the ICANN organization to follow what's in the FOI when they do their work, and it's up to the SOs and ACs, i.e. the component parts of the ICANN community, to play by the rules established in the FOI when they do their policies and their procedures. I will now turn to Bernie and Tijani to see whether there's anything important that I've missed. I think I have not taken up all the time, so I'm. I think that's good news at this time of the day. But should Tatiana or Greg have anything to highlight in terms of the substance of the FOI, by all means, please do go ahead.
Well, to be honest, I'd rather ask Jorge if he has any questions concerning the substance of FOI to be addressed here.
Of course, I would have a good question about the RAGI principles, but you won't hear it.
Do you want to be free around 7:30, or you wanted to continue to 7:30 next morning?
No, seriously. I would give the floor to the members of the group and the other colleagues who have come in case they have any question.
This is Greg Shatton. For the record, I think one thing to consider, you know, the framework document really has two pieces to it: the framework itself, and then the considerations portion of the document, which is more forward-looking. The framework of interpretation itself is not really something to be implemented. It's rather a tool to make sure that interpretation of the human rights bylaw by different groups at different times is as consistent as possible. So we often said in our group where this is a framework of interpretation, not a framework of implementation. The considerations document is more loose in the sense of that that it has, you know, some forward-looking statements, one might say. I was a little concerned about the idea that we're actually that you could somehow implement the framework of interpretation, but I maybe more speaking about the considerations part of the document. Thanks.
Tatiana?
I would like, first of all, to say that, Greg, I disagree with you that we have to implement the framework of interpretation. We have to implement the bylaw.
That is true.
Taking into account the framework of interpretation. So a bit of a legal correction here. I'm sorry.
I agree completely. Yes, we are implementing the bylaw. We are not implementing the
framework. Yes. I also would like to highlight that I'm really curious if there would be any implementation subgroup, not only for coordination on the level of CCWG, but would it be worth to establish a team which would ensure that we are, while, you know, for those who haven't read the framework or read it for the first time and is not aware, the framework of interpretation in its substance is basically leaving the implementation of the bylaw while being consistent with this framework to different advisory committees and supporting organizations, taking into account their policy processes, policy development process, or processes of providing advice. And in this sense, of course, GAC is free, you know, to implement as it wants, right? Including RAGI principles, whatever you want to take into account as GAC. But I'm really curious how it's going to be coordinated on the level of CCWG and if it would be. So are we going to do something with this or not? Maybe more kind of question to Thomas, but this is all I have to say about the FOI.
So before we go to Thomas, in case he has an answer to that question, is there any other point you would like to make colleagues on this? It's clear.
It's just the other point was that kind of a point of subsidiarity in a sense that each SO and AC has their own policy development or policy advisory processes, their own processes for changing their own procedures. And so implementing the bylaw will be kind of within, say, if we're going to talk about, say, GNSO PDPs would be something that's done by the GNSO. Mm. Same thing for the CCNSO. So in terms of kind of trying to have a grand plan, that's we may be here to serve, but not to dominate. I think each group will take a look, and they may take quite different looks at how this is supposed to go. Of course, the idea of the framework of interpretation and, to a lesser extent, the considerations is to try to make sure at least people don't look at the same words and interpret them differently. They may decide they have different choices to make, but at least the underlying bylaw should be interpreted as consistently as possible. Thanks.
Okay. Tatiana?
I do have a question to Jorge. Jorge, is GAC already going to consider how you're going to implement this framework, or the bylaw, how you're going to look at the framework, or you're just starting the discussion? Or you're planning to start the discussion? So at which stage are you now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we might be in a similar situation to the other supporting organizations and advisory committees. That's also one of the purposes of this meeting, is to get everyone together and to have a first exchange of views, because this would be a good segue to the second point in Tatiana.
Do you have CCNSO here?
No, I don't think so. But, well, at least we have some of the players here, not all. But, of course, this could be something we could discuss for the Panama meeting, to have a meeting of all the SOs and ACs to see how we will approach the implementation. And I don't know if Thomas would like to say something. Okay. Thomas, no.
I was distracted with this list for a second. Would you mind repeating your question?
There's a question from Niels online. Would the members of the GAC be interested to develop a coordinated cross-community approach for the implementation of the bylaw, or rather develop its own approach? Well, it's a good question. As Greg mentioned before, the FOI and the considerations according to the principle of subsidiarity leave it to each of the SOs and ACs to see how they implement the FOI and how they consider the considerations. So I think we haven't, of course, discussed this at the level of the GAC plenary. We haven't even discussed this at the level of this working group. I think we are discussing it now. It's the first start to know first where are we with the FOI. That's what we got from Thomas. And I thought it would be interesting to know how the thinking has evolved within the CCWP in this regard, because they had started a work on how they would see the implementation of the FOI at the level of PDPs. And I think they were very much focused on the GNSO PDPs. So I don't know if it would be useful and timely to go now to that discussion, or do you want to make another comment? Okay.
You know, Jorge, when I think about coordination, when I think about the question Niels asked, I find myself of two minds about this. On the one hand, I do believe that coordinated approach is necessary, right? And I believe that this should come to some extent from CCWG accountability. But on the other hand, I think that this should be a very light-touch coordinating approach. Because if you look at what GAC is doing, what ALAC is doing, what GNSO is doing, heavy coordination with will mean significant delays, because really I believe that it will be a big discussion in GNSO how we are actually going to insert these into PDP, on which stage and whatever. So I'm of two minds about this approach. So how balanced this should coordination be? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And I think Tijani wanted to take the floor.
Thank you. Jorge, you spoke about coordinating or discussing the implementation by Panama. I think that perhaps you have to wait till the final adoption of the report. The report is not yet final, since it wasn't. We will put it for the public comment, and then it will go to the chartering organization and then to the board. So don't waste your time and your energy in the implementation, since it is not yet adopted.
That's a good point. At the same time, I don't think it's. I think it's not very foreseeable that there will be very big changes to the FOI or the considerations. As far as I remember, the board and also the chartering organizations in general had a positive position on both parts of the document, but it's true that let's say the discussions at a more formal level, if there are any discussions, and this is something for our leaderships to discuss and to decide, would start afterwards. But I think it's good to start exchanging views. And that's a good goal and a good sense for this meeting. But I think that Greg wanted to make a comment.
Two things, just in terms of looking to the framework of interpretation and the considerations document. For guidance, the section which is answers the consideration, the policies and frameworks, if any, that ICANN needs to develop or enhance in order to fulfill its commitment to respect human rights. The answer that was the output of the group was that each SO and AC should take the core value into consideration in its policy development or advisory role. It is up to each SO and AC and ICANN, the organization, to develop their own policies and frameworks to fulfill this core value. And there's a lot more there to it, but in terms of kind of where the actual implementation, if you will, of the bylaw goes, it's in the SOs and ACs. Now, I agree with Tanya that we, you know, should not be siloed, and that some form of liaising and coordination makes sense, but certainly nothing that's top-down or intending to have a common approach as opposed to a common interpretation. Thank you.
I would also say in response to Tijani's comment that, especially when we're considering how the ICANN community has had to scramble in light of GDPR, I think that there is a lot of value in already starting to get this ball rolling and considering how it could be operationalized and where before the hammer hits in March, or in June, rather.
Okay. In this case, I don't think we have a hammer, but not like the GDPR, but it's good to start thinking. And I would propose that we go over to the CCWP.
One point of information. Thomas And Tijani, when do you or predict that the board would approve the FOI as part of the Workstream 2 recommendations? What's the window, the time window in which you think that's likely to happen?
It's entirely open. I don't have an expert guess. I think we will discuss tomorrow with the board, and I think we will learn more about the mechanics that the board is planning to use for this tomorrow.
Any idea what the earliest would be?
Well, I had suggested during an internal co-chairs meeting that we should try to get the board to review our final report in parallel with the chartering organizations, so that basically in the logical second after the chartering organizations approve, the board would approve. And I think the response was laughter. So I think that the board will only engage in reviewing this once the chartering organizations have given their blessing. And I wouldn't be surprised if the board would also try to link its approval to having some idea about how the implementation is going to work. So I think we would be talking about a couple of months past Panama.
Good. So then I guess we have all the available information on that on the table. So, Colin, Michael, how's your work evolving? Have you looked beyond?
Okay. We're living in the past, apparently. Michael Karaniklis, for the record, thanks very much for extending us this invitation. We're very happy to be here and to be engaging, particularly since both Colin and I, to a certain degree, represent new faces for the CCWP and for, well, and so we very much look forward to the opportunity to reestablish relationships and to hopefully set the stage for further collaborations going forward. So thanks again for inviting us. Could we get the next slide? Can I? All right. Okay. So this is the 10th ICANN for the CCWP. Since 2014, the CCWP has worked to develop a significant body of research on the relationship between ICANN's work and human rights. The slide behind me is extremely clear and easy to understand. Way to express it. It's a sort of visual scoping exercise of the different human rights considerations that may come up. Could we get the next slide, please? Sorry, I don't actually know how to control it. So as discussion of the issue moved forward at ICANN, several research papers were published by the CCWP on ICANN's corporate and social responsibility to respect human rights, with a significant emphasis on the United Nations Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights, otherwise known as the RUGI Principles. Slide. We've discussed about how the different SOs and ACs are going to have their own approach, but hopefully there will be some relevance to the underlying principles of the UN Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights, particularly due to their role in shaping the underlying thinking from both the development of the bylaw and the framework of interpretation. I'd like to take just a moment to discuss this a little bit. I know that these principles are going to be very familiar to many of you, if not all of you, but I think it is worth just exploring once more. The fundamental focus of the UN guiding principles is on the state's duty to protect human rights, as a well-established principle of international law, in combination with the corporate responsibility to respect human rights, including adverse impacts, and to exercise due diligence in carrying out their operations. The second aspect is naturally more relevant to ICANN's operations. There's two main components here, namely to avoid causing or contributing to adverse human rights impacts through their own activities, and to address such impacts when they occur, as well as to seek to prevent or mitigate adverse human rights impacts that are directly linked to their operations, products, or services by business relationships. Now, the main mechanism for these responsibilities is through due diligence in applying these considerations to the policymaking processes, typically via human rights impact assessment, which considers both the actual and potential impacts and which should draw on internal and or external independent external human rights expertise and involve meaningful consultation with potentially affected groups. According to the UN guiding principles, these assessments should further be carried out prior to any new activity, a major decision, or change in the operation, as well as periodically through the life of an existing activity or relationship. And those two principles lead into the third principle, which, alongside protecting by states and respecting by the private sector entities, is the availability of appropriate remedies where an entity has caused or contributed to an adverse human rights impact. So that's my very brief run through of the guiding principles. Next slide, please.
Before we get past the guiding principles, can we talk about how the framework of interpretation and considerations deal with the guiding principles?
Sure. Yep, sure.
So I'll read this out.
Sure.
With regard to the UN guiding principles for business and human rights, no consensus was reached as to their suitability for interpreting the core value. However, with regard to the implementation of the core value, certain aspects of the UN guiding principles for business and human rights could be considered as a useful guide in the process of applying the human rights core value. There are certain guiding principles that may not be suitable for ICANN and others that might be applicable depending on the circumstances. It is beyond the scope of this document to provide a detailed analysis of the guiding principles and their application or not in particular situations.
Thanks. No, I think we understand that.
Yeah, well,
I think
this is not being presented as if anybody understands that. It's being presented as if this is.
But you've said that previously, and that's in the FOI. Which that's in the FOI, and we are getting to the FOI.
I'm sorry. I think it is very important.
I will have to intervene if we continue this way. So we are.
Then we will wait a little bit. After the presentation, we can make comments, and then we can have a discussion. But let's give them at least 3 or 4 minutes more to finish the presentation. Okay?
So I do think that the point is well taken, and we're not trying to present this as a firm list of things that everybody has to be doing. I think that the point in discussing these principles is to provide a bit of information and background as to how the thinking was informed, and it's not.
What thinking? Or why they appear?
Sorry.
The fact that they do, I mean, maybe it's worth exploring them just by virtue of their appearance in the FOI, even if it is an appearance that says that there is a lack of consensus. But can we just move on? Because we can talk about this afterwards. We were just reviewing it because it was something that came up often in the subgroup, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Can we finish the presentation? And the point will be made later on, and Greg already made it, so I don't see really an issue. How long is the presentation?
No, we're done. We can move on to the next slide.
So what is really interesting is to see how you think the FOI would apply to the PDP. So if we can go to that point.
Do you want to take forward?
So, how do I control the slides? Okay, we can go next. So this is kind of what we've already talked about. Most of you were in the subgroup, so it doesn't matter. So next. So this is, we wanted to take the framework of interpretation as the basis for not for obviously interpreting the bylaw, but then that will be the basis for implementing the core value as well. And it, like you said before, it's up to each SO and AC, as well as ICANN, the organization, to develop their own policies and frameworks. While there was no consensus reached on the UNGP being anything binding, it is cited in the framework of interpretation as a useful guide. So And that's just quoting what is in the what ended up being in the final version of the framework of interpretation. And I think that the useful part of that, of the UNGPs, is their reference to human rights impact assessments, because that could be a useful tool that you could incorporate into policy development processes. You may or may not be aware that ICANN, the organization, is already carrying out its own human rights impact assessment of its policies and procedures, which I think that the results will come maybe roughly around the same time as the Workstream 2 recommendations. So if we could move to the next slide, please. So at this point, the Cross-Community Working Party on ICANN and Human Rights has been slightly depleted of its membership because there was the ongoing parallel process of the Human Rights Subgroup in Workstream 2, which had a bit of an overlap in terms of interest, to say the least. So I thought it would be a good time to review the charter of the Cross-Community Working Party, which is intended to map the human rights effects of ICANN policies, provide a forum for related discussions, which is particularly relevant, RUGI principles aside, when we're talking about coordination and we're talking about trying to implement the human rights bylaw across the different SOs and ACs. I personally see a value in having a forum for discussion, a forum for sharing best practices, a forum for not duplicating efforts and for bringing people together from the different SOs and ACs to potentially share knowledge about how to do that. Greg, do you have a comment on this?
Just a question. What is the chartering organization of the Cross-Community Working Party?
The GNSO, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, you're mistaken. It's the non-commercial stakeholder group.
Oh, the non-commercial stakeholder
group. Yeah, so this has the same validity as an intellectual property constituency subgroup. It's not a place for SOs and ACs, you know, to congregate except informally. So we need to think about the structure of ICANN.
Oh, well, it doesn't need to be anything formal.
Colin, we are not discussing the CCWP. So can we go on? I think that is quite clear, and
was it? Did everybody know this? It wasn't even clear to the person who's presenting.
Well,
well, anyway, I still think that even informally there's value in being able to bring the different SOs and ACs together. It remains a big question mark about implementation. As I've talked to quite a few people here, and there is no clear idea of the way forward. I believe that each SO and AC will have to live up to the bylaw as mandated by the bylaw. They will have to live up to this core value. So determining how this is going to happen is an interesting question that we have to deal with as a community and as the different SOs and ACs, just as ICANN, the organization, is doing through the implementation of its human rights impact assessment. So could we see the next slide, please? So at ICANN 60, we presented, the Cross-Community Working Party presented an initial sketch for how a human rights impact assessment could potentially be incorporated into the GNSO PDP. Well, speaking frankly, we have progressed, we at Article 19, this is a bit of a side project, we have progressed quite a lot in developing a model for assessing the human rights impact of registries, which is an infrastructure provider. And due to that work, we have learned several lessons that we hope will be able to feed back into this process and perhaps elucidate some of the challenges that we might be facing down the road when we're trying to assess the human rights impact of the different SOs and ACs. So this is just an example of the kinds of elements that we were looking at. Obviously, you can see this is D.1.1. So there were a lot of different elements that we were looking at. If you recall, for those of you that were at our previous meetings, we were more of asking a lot of questions about who are the duty holders, who are the duty bearers, who are the rights holders. And this has been an attempt to begin quantifying these things and bringing it down to earth and having a measurable tool to employ. So we're still doing research. The cross-community working party is a place where people can informally gather to carry out research and have dialogue on how to advance these things. It's not necessarily, it's nothing binding. It doesn't have a hammer to reference earlier. But I do think that this is something that's useful, that can be able to feed back into the process. Can we go to the next slide, please? So in this room, in this discussion, I would be interested to hear, to echo Tatiana's question from earlier, if there have been any considerations in the GAC or in ALAC of how they would move forward with implementing, developing the mechanisms to live up to this bylaw, and whether or not the CCWP can offer a space or potentially research capacities or scoping and mapping exercises to facilitate or assist with these ongoing processes.
This is the end, I guess, of the presentation.
Can we have the next slide, please?
Okay.
This is the end.
Okay, tomorrow morning, I guess many of us will have parallel meetings, but thank you for the information. In any case, I guess it would be interesting that you shared the current draft of your work, if it's available, with us, so that we could have a look at it from perhaps in the coming weeks. So if
you mean the draft for the GNSO HRIA?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can share that. We shared that with the community before, and it seemed like people, again, it was the same thing, that people were talking more about interpretation and not implementation. So we've kind of gone back to the drawing board a bit to try to find how we can proceed and how we can begin collaboratively developing solutions, because I don't think that it's going to work in this environment if one stakeholder, if one person tries to develop a tool and then bring it and show it to everyone. It just doesn't generate the same kind of buy-in that I think is necessary to make sustainable and implementable mechanisms for adoption. I'd be happy to share it. If you would like to comment, then I would really welcome that.
Surely it's interesting to see. It would be interesting to see how you approach this. And the next question, of course, probably this would be more for the GNSO leadership to answer. But if anyone in the room, especially I'm looking at you, from the GNSO, have an idea whether there is any thinking already ongoing at the GNSO level, at the formal GNSO level, on how to approach the implementation of the FOI very shortly, because afterwards I would like to turn the conversation to ALAC, who have kindly accepted to be here too, and to see what's their current state of thinking. But also, of course, if there are any questions on the presentation that the Michael and Colin just made from other members, participants, the floor is yours. But first of all, Greg.
Just to answer the question in terms of whether there's been anything at the GNSO level, which would really be at the council, GNSO council level, other than reviewing the ongoing work and then being a chartering organization, I would say the answer to the question is no. If you get down a little further, then I think the NCSG Committee on Human Rights, which is called the Cross-Community Working Party on Human Rights, and the NCUC member, Article 19, have been doing their own work. And, you know, people have been talking to them.
Right. Thank you, Greg. I guess that sets the framework of how the discussions are ongoing in the GNSO. Tanya, do you have anything to add?
Well, I mean, I guess I have to say something here as a GNSO counselor, but I really cannot speak in my capacity in this sense, because GNSO Council has so much on its plate right now, and we have GDPR and different processes, and these recommendations have not been approved yet. I do understand that forward-looking approach would be cool, and giving heads up in GNSO would be good, and I believe that some of the councillors are aware of what is coming, but I believe that probably the real work will start once the recommendations will get approved, probably. As to how it's going to be discussed and how it's going, how we are going to proceed, it will probably depend on how CCWG accountability is going to proceed. Will be the implementation team or oversight team? So I think that, you know, the substance issue correlates here very much on the procedural issue. But I believe that it will be level of GNSO councillor. But we have different stakeholder groups, different constituencies, and we have to see how it goes.
Okay. Any other questions beyond these issues related on how the GNSO will approach this? And it's clear that there's the CCWP who are doing like a kind of research work, but this is only that group. But at the formal level, the GNSO hasn't started yet any work. So if it's very short, because otherwise I would like to go to Alan and Irjo.
I certainly think that this work could be helpful for GNSO, because, I mean, you know, when you have to start with something, this might be an idea that GNSO might take into account. But again, I mean, there are different stakeholder groups and contracted, non-contracted parties and whatsoever, so this will have to be adjusted. But thank you guys for your work.
I gotta say, I don't think we fundamentally disagree. Like, honestly, we're the research that's ongoing, the discussions that are ongoing, are obviously not binding on people. It's obviously not trying to impose standards on groups that want to go in a different direction. It's all optional. And so, frankly, when we discuss looking for standards, how to research to develop different avenues, it's fundamentally about sharing different potentially effective avenues to go on. And that's fundamentally what we're trying to do, which, you know, that's the basis of our... Do you want to go?
Yeah. Well, one thing that I thought might be useful for the CCWP to be doing is to be asking about the specific considerations of each SONAC and kind of doing a bit of canvassing work to see what kind of... Oh, for example, I have a question for ALAC. In the FOI, it says that ALAC has... No, I'm sorry, this is the ASO I'm thinking about, that they have the less defined policy process, policy development process. I've been researching, trying to nail this down and trying to figure out where we can insert, perhaps potentially, human rights considerations. But ALAC the same. I'm not exactly sure if I completely understand the step-by-step process of how the recommendations are made by this advisory committee. Maybe it would be helpful to try to pin this down. And then maybe we could try to figure out where a potential mechanism could be implemented. Just an idea off the top of my head. Okay. So maybe we can speak to that and how ALAC is going to implement the bylaw.
Okay, so that's why we have Alan and Ilya here. And I thank you very much for staying for this late hour. And if you have any views, or is there any work ongoing on your side on starting to think how the FOI would be implemented in ALEC, if you think that is necessary?
Thank you. Before I start, I'll note that I have to leave on the half hour, absolutely, which is 6 minutes from now. Can we go? You asked me if we have any questions on this presentation. Can you go back two slides? That's right. I don't want an answer here, but I'll simply note I'm a little bit confused. The bylaw explicitly says we have no obligation to try to enforce whatever our obligations are on our contracted parties, and that seems to be an assessment of the human rights impact of our within a contracted party. So. just a thought. In terms of the ALAC, number one, we have not discussed this. We have discussed the interim reports as they've come out, but there has been no discussion, and certainly no discussion of anything resembling implementation. However, I can take a stab at where we're going by looking at not Roman numeral 8, which is the human rights core value, but the previous one, in number 7. And that says, striving to achieve a reasonable balance between the interests of different stakeholders while also avoiding capture. And that falls straight, first of all, in the case of GNSO GTLD policy, it's a responsibility of the GNSO to make sure it sets up its various processes, both policy development and consultative processes, to make sure that things are reasonably balanced. And our responsibility, our sole responsibility, is if we see something which is not compliant with that, to scream, you know, in the form of comment or whatever it is, to say we believe we have been excluded from this process, or we have not been given a fair voice, or whatever. And I would see we will treat human rights in the same way. If we see something that is evidence to us of the GNSO not doing its job properly, then we will make an appropriate comment, and we will contribute during the policy processes, as we do for anything else, to try to influence the GNSO in how it does it. And if that doesn't succeed, then we have public comments, and if that doesn't succeed, we have the right to give advice to the board. But we don't, you know, we don't explicitly assess every document that comes out of the GNSO saying, was there a fair balance of people. It's something that we evaluate essentially on the fly and make presentations if we think it's appropriate. And I would see us doing the human rights the same way. Again, I'm giving a personal opinion of how I think it's going to evolve. But our workload is such that, you know, there's no way we're going to go through an explicit process auditing everything they do to ensure it. All we can do is react. There was a discussion in another group earlier this week of what the GNSO chair called the scary spreadsheet of all the things they have to do. And my comment was, we don't have a spreadsheet like that, because ours is the sum of the spreadsheet of the GNSO and the CCNSO and the ICANN organization as they come out from public comments. So we've got a lot of things that we look at. Many of them we say, sorry, we don't think there's a significant impact on end users in this, and we simply don't consider it. And it's an assessment we have to make on everything. If we consider it, then we go into it and do it in some detail. But again, it's not following a set pattern, and we're not likely to run set tests against things.
Okay. Any reactions to that? Especially from the GAC members? Do you feel mirrored by the comments made by Alan? Because I guess they made a lot of sense, at least to me. So if there are no comments from your side, I think Colin wants to say something.
Yeah, sure. I just wanted to say, just first of all, this is an example of a private company that was taking on their own HRIA. So that's a completely parallel process. But it is within the DNS space, which is a hard one to analyze the impact of. I was simply bringing this up as perhaps a potential to have lessons learned in this context and bring them back into ICANN. And then my second comment would be, I realize that a lot of these decision-making processes happen on the fly, and I don't necessarily think that there's anything wrong with that. But I just wonder, when I do things on the fly, I have an internal logic that is consistent in one way or another. However, in this environment, when you might have different people coming in and out, or you might have different people present at any given call, I just wonder if when you're doing things on the fly and you don't have mechanisms that are codified, if you can be assured of having a consistent application of any standard at all.
The candid answer is probably you can't. And sadly perhaps, but that's the same level of standard that we use to simply assess whether there is going to, we believe there will be a user impact on something. This is all very subjective because people have different views, for instance, on, you know, we can talk about, you know, in a current policy environment, the new GTLDs, which part of that affects users? Okay, so we participate in the process, but ultimately, if we're going to give advice to the board saying the GNSO has gone in a direction which we believe is counter to the interest of users, which is what our mandate is in ICANN, then that's a very subjective assessment. And I just don't see we have a mechanism for doing anything else.
I think that's what we're getting at here, is developing a formalized assessment process.
Remember, we are a volunteer organization, okay? Unlike virtually every other part of ICANN, where people are, many of the people are paid in a related area or paid to be here, this is all volunteer. Most of our people, virtually all of our people, are not employed in the DNS industry. Many of our people are not even employed in the internet industry. So, you know, if we say this is going to have to be a rigorous thing, which is going to have to be done on every document we look at in order to assess whether we think we even need to assess it, and I understand that was somewhat redundant, it's likely not to get done. So we have to be very pragmatic in how we approach this.
And Alan, I would like to really thank you for being here, and I think you have to go. So thanks very much for being here. And I think that this conversation shows that we need to continue with this discussion. There are, of course, legitimate issues, both from what Alan mentioned, the overwhelming quantity of work we have on our plates, how we do our business in the advisory committees, because in the GAG it's also similar. We usually develop the advice in one meeting. We don't have a long process before the meeting where we could insert lengthy procedures. But at the same time, as Colin mentioned, perhaps even in such informal settings, it would be good to think about how you can codify that you at least have something in the process that reminds you to look at the core value of human rights and the framework of interpretation. So I think we are over the timing for the session. If no other comments are to be made, especially from the work group members, I would like to close this for this meeting. And we will be sending out the work plan and also the situation about the co-chairmanship, in case the members of the work group have any comments, any proposals. Remember, this is a member-driven working group, so it's mostly up to you to fulfill the tasks we agreed in the work plan of 2016. And for the time being, we will continue to monitor, especially at least from my side, the FOI and how the implementation of the FOI goes forward. So thank you.
Implementation of the bylaw.
Yeah, okay. The core value. So thank you so much. And you are released.